Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We will be joined later, I think this hour, by Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com. So looking forward to that. We got a lot of things with PK to get into on the Titans front, and we will do that. Taking your thoughts on the Titans at 615-737-1025. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. The caller number five. Caller number five, 615-737-1025. Caller five will win a pair of tickets to Holiday World and Splash and Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. We've discussed the L'Jarius Sneed situation. He is back out there off of PUP for the Titans, and we'll see if and when he gets involved with team activities at practice between now and week one. We will get a little bit more in detail into L'Jarius Sneed with PK a little bit later in the program as well. A lot of Titans thoughts on the text line to get to, so we will roll through some of those right now. We had a texter earlier wondering why the Titans have not signed Za'Darius Smith yet, and I'll just extend that conversation even beyond Za'Darius Smith to an edge rusher in general. Now, we saw, you know, Jeremy Fowler rolled through Titans camp a couple of weeks ago and threw out the idea of, hey, maybe keep an eye on Preston Smith. Like, Preston Smith could be a name to watch for the Titans in terms of somebody they could bring in. Now, Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith both are 32 years old. Za'Darius Smith will be 33 here in a few weeks on September the 8th, and Preston Smith will be 33 in mid-November. So, obviously, neither one of those guys are in their prime anymore. Preston Smith went from, in 2023, 8 sacks with Green Bay, and then last year, in combined with Green Bay and Pittsburgh, dropped down to 4.5. And if you watched him play, like he had a bit of a drop-off last year. So, in general, when guys like that are still available at this point, there's a reason for it. Now, look, Za'Darius Smith, you know, obviously ended up in Detroit last year when they went through their situation with Aiden Hutchinson. I think he finished with 4 sacks in Detroit. So he had combined last year 9 sacks between his stint in Cleveland and Detroit. That's still pretty darn good. I mean, when you're talking about purely sack total, 9 sacks in 2024 for Za'Darius Smith is still pretty good. I would imagine for him specifically, he is still waiting on the right opportunity and is probably more interested in going somewhere where he feels like he's got a chance to win. And he's going to land somewhere at some point. Where that's going to be, unless the money is just outrageous for a guy that's 32, about to be 33 years old, I doubt very seriously there's much consideration he'd give to the Titans. I could be wrong about that, but I do think you reach a point. And look, he's a 3-time Pro Bowler. He's a guy that's been very productive with Baltimore and then Green Bay, and he's bounced around since then from Minnesota to Cleveland and then to Detroit last year. But he's been very productive. I mean, you're talking about 2019, 13.5 sacks, 2020, 12.5 sacks. He had 10 sacks in Minnesota in 2022, 9 sacks last year between Cleveland and Detroit. A very productive player. My guess is he wants to win. Like that's my guess of, you know, he got the deal to Detroit last year. So, look, I have no clue where Za'Darius Smith is going to end up here.
You do wonder with some of these vets, how much is it winning versus how much are they waiting to see who's going to pony up the most?
Correct.
You know, there could be a couple of teams who have reached out over the course of the offseason. And when you get older, you don't want to do training camp.
No, if you can get the other part.
If you can get away with it and there's still some people kind of hollering, but and they're interested and you don't have to be in the camp the whole time given your age, you know, you try to get away with it as long as you can.
I mean, the Titans, if memory serves me correctly, I think agreed to a deal with Jadeveon Clowney like the week before the regular season started, right? Like it was like September the 5th or September the 6th. Or something like that. So, like, Clowney did not go through training camp, and then he ended up with the Titans. And, look, I'm not saying that Za'Darius Smith is Jadeveon Clowney, but I do think you have to remember that part of this as
well.
Yeah,
the article from Jim Wyatt that says the Titans agreed to terms with veteran DE outside linebacker Jadeveon Clowney September 6th.
Yep, there you go. So September the 6th.
So it might have been the 5th.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, that's pretty late in the process there to bring somebody in. So, look. I think
Clowney's still available.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Bring him back, baby.
You could bring him back in. Maybe that'd be the way to go.
Like, we can bring back the Jadeveon Rex Croak, some type of yeah, something out there.
He's also 32. They got a bunch of 32-year-old pass rushers out there, baby.
The market
is chock full of 32-year-old pass rushers.
And they're all probably looking for maybe something different. I don't know if it's all money for them. Some of it's going to be money. Some of it's going to be winning.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
look, I'm not going to discount the possibility that at some point here the Titans land one of those guys. I mean, frankly, with where their edge rusher group is right now, I don't think it's the worst idea in the world. Like, I wouldn't be opposed to them bringing in one of those guys. Probably not Clowney, but one of those, like a Preston Smith or a Za'Darius Smith, sure, why not? Now, I've got my doubts, particularly with Za'Darius Smith, that he'd be very interested in coming to the Titans. And then with Preston, how much he got left? Like, there was a pretty significant drop-off in his level of play last year. And, look, you know, I watched a lot of him last year before he was traded from Green Bay to Pittsburgh, and it just wasn't the same. So you have to keep that. I mean, some of these guys at that position, when they reach 32, 33, I mean, you hit a pretty staunch wall there.
Yeah,
so is that what he's done? Is that why he's not available? I mean, look.
And they're only going to be situational players at this point. You can't sign a starter that's going to play every snap.
Right.
So maybe he can spell Key here and there. Maybe they could spell Femi here and there. You know,
Which may be worth it. Yeah.
Maybe, you know, I'm interested to see. So far, it seems like Draymond Jones has been the third and long edge rusher, and Femi has been the early down guy.
Yeah.
Maybe I've been reading that wrong as far as just like the early play time in the preseason games. Wasn't it Draymond Jones who slipped in that Tampa Bay game, who kind of got around him on that third down, looked like he might have had a step on the tackle and slipped.
They were playing on the
new sod.
The terrible field out there, yeah.
So, you know, maybe, if you do sign somebody at this point, it's just going to be a situational guy.
Yeah, but, I mean, I understand if you're the Titans looking at your edge rusher group right now, there's a balance you got to strike there, too, because – You did just spend a second-round pick on Femi Oladejo. And
your
second-round pick needs to play.
You take away his snaps.
And if you bring somebody else in, you're taking away some snaps there. Now, I also understand if you're a Titans fan and you hear that, it's like, well, that's great. They spent a second-round pick on a guy who may or may not be ready to play meaningful snaps for them. So why not add to the room and bring somebody else in who maybe can? I understand both sides of it. Like, I just, on paper.
Playing the long-term game with Femi here.
Yeah, like, on paper, their edge rusher group is one of the biggest weak spots on the team. Like, you know, you can point to a few different positions if you want to of where they're not very good. But edge rusher, when you combine the lack of proven production, or especially high-level production, plus the importance of that position, you'd be hard pressed, in my opinion, to find a spot that's more important where they're lighter. Now, maybe wide receiver, like some of that to me is going to depend on how much Tyler Lockett's got left in the tank. Like if Tyler Lockett can give you 50 catches this year for, you know, 650, 700 yards and a few touchdowns, that's one thing. If Tyler Lockett is the second coming of Tyler Boyd from what we saw last year, that's another thing. That's not very good. So, you can make an argument from a couple of different positions, but people keep talking about the waiver wire, and I'm not saying it's impossible to find somebody to come in and be impactful for you on the waiver wire. But if you're relying on that, like if your strategy is, well, don't worry, we got our pick of the litter, the waiver wire, you still have to keep in mind that you're dealing with people on the waiver wire that are not making rosters elsewhere. And I understand your roster is in rougher shape than most out there. So maybe somebody not making a roster in Philadelphia is way different than not making it here, and they could come in and help. I recognize that. But the bottom line is, like, if you think that you're going to bring people in off the waiver wire that are going to come in and be, like, impact players for you and really make a huge difference, I don't know how much you're living in reality.
Very limited positions you can get that from. You know, here and there, you can do that. Like what the Titans claimed. Was it Josh Klein?
Yeah, I think so.
Off waivers? Yeah. And they plugged him in as a starting guard.
Yeah.
Like, you can find a guard. You know, maybe you can find a safety.
You can find a good – like, maybe, you know
– a third-string running back?
Yeah, you can find maybe a corner that comes in that –
can be a good special teams reason, or a gunner.
Yeah.
Something like
good
that.
Good on special teams and can give you a few snaps on the defensive side of the ball. But, like, if you think they're going to get on the waiver wire and they're going to go find a corner that is, like, lining up, let's say L'Jerry Sneed isn't healthy and can't go. Like, he's lining up starting out there.
No.
It's probably not where you want to be. Or an edge rusher that didn't make it somewhere else that comes here and is, you know, providing you 8 sacks. Like, I just –
that's not going to
happen.
I don't
think it's going to happen.
Yeah, you might get him as a depth guy who can – somebody's edge rusher group is better than yours, and you're able to swap out the fifth spot and make an upgrade. Sure, but it's not going to be a starter-level swap out at this point.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. A lot of your thoughts to get to on the Titans front. We will do that coming up next. Paul Kuharsky will be with us later this hour as well. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him as well. Nashville's best deal of the week is Bavarian Beer House, conveniently located at Opry Mills Mall. Enjoy beer, food, music, and fun at Nashville's only authentic German beer hall, where it's Oktoberfest every day. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals to get a $50 gift card for only $25 to Bavarian Beer House while supplies last. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Did you learn anything from the scuffle, I guess, with Jeffrey the other day? Anything come out of that in terms of things you can gain?
Did I learn anything from it? Jeff strong as I would say. It was fun at the same time. And I think it was what we needed, though. I mean, we love competing, especially me, Jeff. And, you know, I'm excited to have that man as my teammate. And so, I mean, I can't wait to see what he do. No, Sundays, I already know what he's about, but I get to see the real thing coming soon.
That's Cam Ward yesterday. Hey, did you learn anything from that scuffle with Jeffrey Simmons? Yeah, he's real strong. I learned that.
He's got muscles.
He's real strong. Stronger than me. Real strong. That was pretty funny.
That was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. He's like,
I enjoyed that thoroughly.
He's like, I'm not sure I learned a lesson other than Big Jeff is strong. So, and I'm glad I don't have to get hit by him, I guess.
Good stuff there from Cam Moore. Taking your thoughts on the Titans at 615-737-1025, our phone number. Ben on the text line saying, I know they got to keep emergency money available, but how much cap space do the Titans have? According to overthecap.com, they've got $28.5 million of cap space. Now, I don't think cap space right now is a huge concern for them. Like, they're not being prevented to go bring in Preston Smith, who's not going to get anything more than a one-year deal, by cap space,
nope.
Right? Like, the cap space is not the concern at the moment. You know,
but at this point in the season, though, a lot of teams don't have the money that
for sure.
they did.
Yeah.
You know, and so only certain teams are willing to continue to spend, and that might be because of an injury or something like that, the emergency
yeah,
fund.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, if another team, a contender, loses somebody that they're counting on, then they'll bust into the emergency rainy day fund.
Well, and then again, like, you know, it could get into the regular season before Preston Smith lands somewhere or before Za'Darius Smith lands somewhere. And the other part of this is, like, is anything actually going to happen with Trey Hendrickson and Micah Parsons?
That's
right?
True. Those are
because,
wild cards.
You know, if you're a team out there that is competitive and you feel like there's a chance that they, like the Bengals, might actually trade Trey Hendrickson and you would be interested, or that the Cowboys might actually trade Micah Parsons, like, you can't just find Micah Parsons out on the street. So, like, if you think that that might actually happen, like, are you waiting for some clarity on that? I mean, there's a big difference between Micah Parsons and Trey Hendrickson and Preston Smith, guys.
Yep.
Like, there's a huge difference. So,
big time.
Again, I'm not saying that teams are waiting on that before they bring Preston Smith in, because you'd be waiting on something that may or may not happen that you have no control over if you're talking about Trey Hendrickson and Micah Parsons. But that is, you know, it's floating in the background.
There aren't those dominoes. You know, something happens with that. You know, which one goes first? Was it the Parsons situation or is it the Hendricks situation?
Right.
And what does that mean for the other one in those situations? And then it all kind of dominoes from there as far as who's available and who's looking for pass rusher help.
And it kind of feels like it's at least possible that both of those guys could get moved. Like, we had Charles on yesterday, and I think he put it at 51-49 that he thought he was given a slight lean to Trey Hendrickson playing in a Bengals uniform by the time week one rolls around.
He made the point that these teams are anticipating or, you know, expecting the players to buckle and not lose game checks when the games come start rolling.
And I think that makes a lot of sense for Hendrickson because of his age, right? Like, Hendrickson's 31. Parsons, like, if Parsons is dug in here and there's really just a deterioration of the relationship between
him
and
the Cowboys.
He can
play more of the long game.
He can play more of the long game because he knows whether it's in Dallas or somewhere else, like, somebody's going to give him a massive deal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, with Hendrickson, it's now. And if he gets out there on the open market a year from now, when you're talking about a guy that's going to be 32, like, how much, what's he going to get at that point? I don't know. And I think that's where a lot of the hesitation from Cincinnati is coming from there. Parsons, there's not a doubt. Like, Parsons is going to get paid an astronomical amount of money. The question is it going to be in Dallas? Or is it going to be somewhere else? So I think Parsons has more leverage to extend this out than Hendrickson does.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably true. If you're Cincy, tricky game there, you know, as far as the back and forth and the playing game of chicken, I guess, with Hendrickson, because where Cincy is and their window to win and how much help they actually need on defense – and what their defense might look like without Hendrickson versus, you know, how mad is Burrow going to be? He's going to throw another fit about them not spending any money after they spent money on Chase and Higgins. Yeah. So, I don't know. If I were them, I probably would have given Higgins' money to Hendrickson if I were Cincy.
I agree. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Try to keep Chase, you know. Higgins, like, that's... that's what the teams are doing now with top quarterbacks when you pay them money, is you expect your quarterback to uplift the receivers around him. That's what the other teams are doing. And if you're Cincy and you're Burrow and you pay Burrow like that, but you're still going to pay the wide receivers like that, that I'm not sure that's the best allocation of funds.
And I don't mind the Chase deal because I think he's unreal.
And the two of them together, coming from LSU, drafted together, the chemistry that they have, you know, I would have definitely paid Chase. But Higgins, I think I would have seriously considered giving Higgins his money to Hendrickson for the next 2 years to keep the window more open.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I look, on the edge rusher conversation for the Titans, the best possible development for me would be over the next few weeks here, and maybe it's not by week one, but by week three, week four, Oladejo has made some big progress. And you feel like he's a guy that you can maybe rely on is too strong of a word, but you can put him out there and with an expectation that he can be productive, right? Like, you know, he's a rookie. There's some natural growing pains from any rookie that are going to come along the way, particularly one that basically just started playing this position last year. So we talked about him and, you know, the project pick that it seems like he is. But, like, early in the season, do you see some pretty rapid acceleration in terms of his growth? Because, like, right now, if they played Denver tomorrow, like, how much would we expect Femi Oladejo to play in that game?
It's a good question.
You know, based on what I've seen in the preseason, maybe not a ton, right? Like,
maybe,
you know,
him and
Arden
Draymond
Key?
Jones split snaps? I don't know. It's interesting, the three-way rotation there between Key, Jones, and Femi Oladejo.
Well, and really, like, the question is, like, at edge rusher right now, do they have anybody? And, you know, Draymond Jones, I think, can do it. But do they have anybody that's truly, like, a three-down player at that spot?
I don't think so.
Because Arden Key really hasn't been.
And he's not really.
Yeah. Like, do they have anybody that's, like,
Landry?
He's a three-down guy out there. Like, do they have a Landry? And I'm not even talking about production from Landry.
Just
I'm talking
being
about
able to play.
Being able to do
set
it.
Set the edge.
And skill set.
Early and downs. Yeah. Set the edge with some size against the run.
Right.
And on third down, be able to get after the quarterback.
But like I do think it's a big thing to watch this year. Because, I understand in some ways it kind of feels like the Oladejo pick has been given a little bit of a pass here just because it's like, well, he just started playing the position last year and we know it's a project pick. It's like, well, that's fine, but it is a second-round pick.
Whatever.
Like, they need legitimate production from him this year. And I'm not asking him to go out there and, you know, have 8 sacks or anything, but if we're halfway through the season and he's giving you basically nothing out there, like he's playing, you know, 40% of the snaps, 35% of the snaps, and he's not really a factor when he's out there, like to me, that's a problem. Look, I understand that we're probably not going to judge the Oladejo pick in totality until we're a year or two down the road from here, but it's not a great sign to me if he just doesn't give you anything this year. Like you need him to give you something. Need your second round pick to come in and give you something.
Early on, I do wonder, you know, if you're starting D line, which you got Simmons, Sweat, Key, and would it be Oladejo or will it be Draymond Jones week one versus Denver?
I think it'll be Jones.
And whether you know, and do you see Femi as more of an early down guy right now?
Yep.
Or do you see him as the third down guy? Do you see Draymond Jones as more of the third down guy or the early down guy? Or are you using them as both? I'll be interested to see how the rotation kind of plays out.
Yeah, for sure. 615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot more of your Titans thoughts to get to coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tune in to 102.5 The Game this Saturday at 11 a.m. for our college football game of the week, Iowa State taking on Kansas State, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants and Circa Sportsbook. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. Robbie Stanley alongside Ian Safar. Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com is with us now on the program. PK, welcome into the show. How are we doing?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here. I'm looking forward to getting into the part of the season where we're doing this regularly on Wednesdays.
Correct.
But I think one more week of finding a spot before we get into our regular mode. But I'm happy to be here. I'll join you tomorrow for the full boat.
That is correct.
As Rex Road, I was just texting with Rex Road, who says he's fighting through it, moving multiple kids into school now. I said, I'm sure you celebrate at the end of the day with a nice steak dinner.
Can't be good for the gout.
No,
moving.
No.
Just walking all
physically
over.
Moving.
Physically moving.
Better yet, carrying
and then
things.
Actually moving. It's been a busy week out there for the Titans, PK. So let's just start on the L'Jarius Sneed front because I know you've gotten some more information on the legal side of things. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the show, but what do you make of the development legally of the criminal case going down from the original felony charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and now, as you reported yesterday, a Class A misdemeanor charge coming up on September 25th will be with the grand jury for the hearing. Class A misdemeanor charge of failure to report. How does this affect kind of his legal status moving forward and maybe the eyes of what this now is in the NFL as well?
Well, it's certainly a lesser deal. Basically, connected to the civil suit, when his attorney had to answer, when Sneed had to technically answer for what he was accused of, his lawyer said, look, this third party, who at that time was a John Doe, if anything happened, it was him. He did it without, quote, any assistance, encouragement, or direction from L'Jarius Sneed. And the investigation, it turns out, agrees.
Yeah.
He was telling the truth. Now, so this Takanze Warmack Williams, who was his assistant, is still charged with the felony assault with a deadly weapon charge. So they're, you know, putting this pieces of this all together. They're agreeing. This guy did did the shooting. He's accused of doing the shooting. But they're saying Snead was clearly in view of him doing this and didn't say anything to anybody about it. Didn't say, hey, this dude put some people in some serious jeopardy, and I saw it.
Right.
And in Texas, you have an obligation, if you see something like that, to report it. And so he's still in trouble to a much lesser degree for not reporting his buddy. I got a moment with him stepping away before I knew that this stuff had happened yesterday, and that was my primary question. Hey, this dude who's your personal assistant, who you basically said did this stuff, what's your deal with him? And he said, I'm not connected to that dude anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Great quote, by the way. I do not associate with that dude anymore. He is out of my life.
So legally, he's in far better shape. The grand jury is going to hear this case on September 25th. He could be indicted for it. You know, the extremes of this are a year in county jail, a fine of $4,000 or both. We know a first-time offender is not going to get the extremes there. You would imagine it's, you know, maybe a fine, maybe some level of probation. And the civil suit, you know, stands on its own, but it was alleging that Snead and this Williams, you know, did the shooting. And the court, the investigation has already determined that Snead did not do the shooting. He's not accused of doing the shooting. So the civil suit would be seeming to fall apart on Snead's level. So he's in much better shape on the legal stuff. On the football stuff, and look, yesterday I initially wrote that the felony stuff, they different counties operate in such a fashion. So I've been calling. Has this case gone to the grand jury? Yesterday they told me the case had gone to the grand jury. Okay, is it the same thing? I can't tell you. You know, what's going on? I can't tell you. What date did it get posted to the grand jury? I can't tell you. Over and over and over and over, you know. So finally, later in the day, I got to the documentation. So the story to me evolved during the course of the day because they make it so incredibly difficult to find what happened. So, you know, that's on me to a degree, but I was, you know, kind of writing it as it developed. So I apologize that the early version was, incomplete, if you will. The football side, I mean, everybody's saying, what does it mean and all of that. I don't think anybody can – you'd be very unwise to count on L'Jarius Snead at this point. He said, you know, he said at that football camp, I'm as healthy as I've been.
Yep.
So I asked, you know, why haven't you been out here all of this time? And he said, that's them. That's not me. You know, and I've got to go with their process. It's not necessarily my process. And so he's had to wait. I mean, their thing from the beginning when they traded for him is he's going to be a guy, you know, this was Rand Carthon talking, but Brinker was aligned with him. He's going to be a guy that's ready on Sundays, you know, and he's going to be on maintenance during the week to be ready on Sundays. Now, it would seem that knee's gotten worse. And so that's going to be the case. He said the quad thing is done.
Yeah.
There's not a quad thing anymore. But I don't see how you can count on L'Jarius Snead for anything until we see him do something. And, you know, I'm not going to say don't be excited. I mean, he should be their top cornerback. But until we see him be their top cornerback, I think you got to just continue to have some doubts and hope.
Well, can he get, number one, can he get on the field? And number two, can he stay on the field for multiple weeks, right? Like, and that's the other
three,
thing.
And number three, when he's on the field, is he anything close to the guy they traded for?
Yeah, because, I mean, right now, my impression of the Titans' defense right now, and I with L'Jarius Snead not factored into this, I don't think they can rush the passer well enough. I don't think they can cover well enough. And I got questions about whether or not they can stop the run well enough. Well, those three pretty important parts of defense right there. If you can't do any of those three – you're going to get just absolutely obliterated out there in the National Football League.
Hopefully they get some better field position based on improved special teams and smarter and fewer turnovers from the offense. So that would be something. I mean, I agree with you entirely. And what they're looking for, and I'm sure we'll get to the inside linebacker conversation, who's popped? That's why Cedric Gray is kind of a big deal right now.
Yep.
He popped. Well, who else has popped? Anywhere. Offense, defense, whatever. Ridley.
Yeah.
Right? Ridley's popped.
Helms had his moments, but I think a lot of that's also he's a rookie and you're looking for that. Like,
right. He's popped a little bit. Gray's popped. I think you could say Marcus Harris has popped. He had two really good plays in that game where he showed the kind of makeup speed you want at quarter. Where you go, hey, look at that guy.
Yep.
He's making a big-time NFL play. Now, you don't like the guys 5 yards away from him, but in the end, he closes the 5 yards. He gets his hand up. He breaks up a pass that would have, you know, been a game-swinging play in an NFL regular season game.
Yep.
And his arrow's up. It's not a long list of guys who've popped, and they need more pop.
Yeah, and again, to your point, I mean, there's been such a long wait to get to this point of him just getting off PUP, Snead. And now he's off PUP, but we've talked the whole time about getting him onto the field is just the first step. And now what is he? Because it's still hard for me to believe that he's not played football in almost a year, and he's just going to step out there week one against Denver, and he's going to look like the all-pro guy you got from Kansas City. So if he's not that, which I think is bordering on unrealism, what is he? Is he still pretty good? Like, is it going to take him 6 weeks into the season to look like he's got a clue out there? Like, I have no idea what to expect from him week one, assuming he's available.
Yeah, and I can hear everybody listening to us saying, 6 weeks, Robbie. By 6 weeks, he's going to be sidelined again.
He could be.
With the knee.
Yeah.
You know, my question is, can he handle full boat by week one?
Right.
You know, and if he can't handle a full boat by week one, then you're counting on Jerome Baker, who quite frankly is an arrow down guy. I like Jerome Baker. I think Jerome Baker is, you know, ideally a fourth cornerback. Last year, he rose to the occasion, and I thought he played pretty well. He played starting-level NFL cornerback, maybe not for every team, but for a bottom-half team in the NFL, I thought he was better than serviceable as a starting corner. He does not look like that right now. Now, Marcus Harris, maybe – sample size last 10 days yep. has been good. Maybe they are ships passing. I don't know. And we're not going to have to know if Snead's ready to go. So you got Snead, Brownlee, McCreary. Now who's next?
Right.
I would say, Judy Lawley's gotten a lot of run as the second nickel. So I think he's a make it guy. And I think he's probably McCreary's backup. Who's the backup outside? First backup outside, right now, if I was writing it down, I'd put Harris.
Yeah. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We got a whole lot to get to with PK. We will take your questions for him on the Titans front at 615-737-1025. More on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. PK, the scuffle between Cam Ward and Jeffrey Simmons, getting a lot of attention both here locally and around NFL circles this week. You were there. You saw it. You questioned Jeffrey Simmons about it the day after. So let's just start there. What did you make of the whole situation and Jeffrey Simmons' response to it, which was essentially, well, I know I can't touch the quarterback, but I think the media is blowing this way out of proportion.
All right, for starters, To the faction out there, which seems like a large faction. I don't know. I overread Twitter. Saying, well, you guys are making too big a deal out of it. Like, it's a practice scuffle, whatever. Like, there are a ton of things we talk about. The events of the day. Like, you guys just talked about the potential pass rushes out there.
Yeah.
Preston Smith.
Za'Darius Smith.
Za'Darius Smith.
Yeah. Clowney.
Clown, he likes saying that.
Bring him back. Bring him back.
Matthew Judon, you didn't talk about enough, I think. Is that qualifies making a big deal? Has the game now made a big deal out of the three veteran free agent pass rush? Oh, my God, you guys talked about it for 10 minutes. You're droning on and on. What a big deal you made. Every conversation, not a big deal. Like, talk about the news of the day. Then everybody's like, oh, my God, it happened yesterday. Why are you talking to him today? Well, they hit him the first day. They escorted him off the field because he was still hot. So topics don't disappear just because time has passed. Jeff is available the next day. You talk to Jeff. Callahan wasn't available till the next day. You talk to Callahan. Is it a federal issue? No. Is it a conversation topic? Yes. Then the next day, Cam's available. I didn't even ask the question of Cam. But it's been 3 days since Cam's available. Somebody asks Cam. If you want to complain about the story getting drawn on, talk to the Titans about their availability schedule. Don't talk to me. Also,
fair point.
Also, I'm taking a lot of heat because I've asked a lot of the questions, okay? Well, what I do at press conferences is seek more information on these things. I got more information on these things, and I tweeted about them. Out there, I challenge any of you that have an issue with how I've covered this to go look. Did Easton Freeze write a story about this? I believe he did. Did Teron Davenport write a story about this? I believe he did. Did the Tennessean write a story about this? I believe they did. Go to paulkuharsky.com and find me a story about this. You know who thought it was the least of a story? You know who chose himself or whose bosses didn't choose to write a story about this? Me. So there's some tweets on my timeline about a scuffle involving the best defensive player and the quarterback and some opinion on Twitter.
Yeah.
Which you scroll by. Is there a story? Did I invest any time? Did I publish anything? Did I find photos and write a headline and do SEO? I did not. So if you have beef with how it's been covered, and I include Jeff Simmons in this, go look at who published stories about it, okay? And some of those guys have to,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Teron's told what, you know, certain guys have bosses that want it, A to Z, that they want, you know, they operate, they want clicks in some fashion. I chose not to write about it. That tells you how important I think. If I think something's important, I'm writing about it at my site.
Yeah.
There's not a word about it at my site.
No, I think it's totally fair.
All right, look, Jeff says you can't hit the quarterback.
Yeah.
But exactly I hit I the quarterback, yep. And you guys blew it up. Never his fault. Nothing's ever his fault. It's the media's fault for blowing it up. All right? Again, I didn't write a story about it, so I don't know how much blowing it up I did. I asked questions about it. The fact that the audio responses to my questions gets taken by NFL Network and gets taken by you guys and gets taken by everybody in play.
Rich Eisen.
Yep. Rich Eisen. That's not me. That's them. They're blowing it up. You want to basket all the media together? That's lazy. That's lazy. And what he said doesn't make any sense. You can't hit the quarterback, but I hit the quarterback.
Yeah.
And it's the media's fault.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody else hits the quarterback, I'm gonna react in a way that defends the quarterback. So Jeff, by his reasoning in this scuffle, when he hit the quarterback, he should have beat himself up.
No, that was my biggest issue.
I mean, he applies no logic when he's in the middle of stuff. And he's always an innocent victim.
That was my biggest thing about the whole thing. Because, again, like, I don't think this is that big of a deal. But I just don't touch the quarterback. That's what it comes down to me. You don't need your star defensive tackle touching your first overall pick quarterback.
And here's the guy who got away with something here. Cam Ward. And I'm glad Callahan said what he said. He started it.
Yep.
He got into the fray. There's no reason for him to be pushing Jeff Simmons. Now,
no.
I think Jeff Simmons should turn around and say, if you weren't in that red jersey, I would be kicking your ass right now.
Yep.
That's the appropriate response, right? But Cam Ward can't be shoving a defensive teammate in the back knowing that he's got that protection. I think he's probably surprised that somebody comes back with hands to the face there because that's very uncommon. But, and then Cam says the next day it's exactly what we needed, blah, blah, blah. It's two plays before practice is over. What happened was some extensive jawing after that, which is also undermentioned, between Calvin Ridley and Arden Key that seemed to be an extension of that whole thing. Is it a big deal in the big picture? No. Was it story of the day caliber stuff? to a lot of people, it was. Was it Twitter-worthy conversation? Absolutely.
Well, the one thing that was interesting to me beyond all the pushing, shoving stuff was your exchange with Brian Callahan about whether or not Jeffrey Simmons should have been kicked out of practice. And it goes back to last year where Jeffrey Simmons threw a punch and Brian Callahan did not throw him out of practice. Here's what Callahan had to say in your exchange with him the other day at practice.
What would it take for you to discipline Jeff on the field and throw him off? You didn't last summer in a much more serious incident.
Yeah.
That seemed worthy of something in the moment to some of us. It seems sure. Like he has free rein.
That's not accurate at all. Look, I don't know where this throwing out of practice thing came from. It's pretty bothersome, to be honest with you. I've worked in the league for 16 years with a lot of really good head coaches, and I've never seen a player thrown out of a training camp practice for some pushing and shoving and some cuss words. So it doesn't register to me the same way. I don't know what it's like been before here or anything like that, but I've coached a long time, and I've been around training camp since I was 15 years old, and the amount of players I've seen thrown out of a practice is I can't even remember one that ever happened. So I don't know where that comes from. I don't know what that desire to see that happen comes from. I don't understand it. But Jeff he left the practice field after that play, just like we'd ask our assistant coaches, if tempers get hot, take the guy off the field and cool him down, and practice ended two plays later. So, I don't understand all that. But I think all my conversations with Jeff and the players involved and now that those are internal.
So that's clearly a talking point that is, in his words, bothersome to him. What did you make of his response there to your question?
Well, he initially says, I've never seen a player thrown off for pushing and shoving and cussing. But then in the second phase of that, it sounds like he's not seen players thrown off. I mean, do we think Mike Vrabel lets Jeff Simmons or anyone go hands to the face of the number one pick in the draft in a red jersey without stopping practice and doing something about it?
No.
Like we think Mike Vrabel had better results than Brian Callahan, is a better coach than Brian Callahan?
Yes.
That's where it comes from for me.
Yeah.
If Brian wanted to get into a more extensive conversation about the root of it.
615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot more things to get to with PK. A lot of your thoughts on the text line we will get to as well. Keep them coming at 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.